Welcome to Thrilling Tales of Adventure. I'm Mardell. And it's time for another chapter of Black Bartlemy's Treasure by Jeffrey Farnall. Chapter 5, How I Came to Conisbee Sheen. It being yet full early for my purpose, I took to the woods, and presently chancing upon a little stream that bubbled pleasantly mid shady willows, I sat myself down within this greeny bower, and fell to watching the hurrying waters of this brook, and hearkening to its drowsy murmur. And lying thus with the good green world around me, and the sunny air blithe with the mellow piping of the birds, the soft wind rustling the leaves about me, what must I have in mind but bloodshed and the destruction of my enemy, insomuch that, reaching a stone from the brook, I drew the knife from my girdle and set about straightening the blade thereof. I was thus employed, when all at once the leaves on the opposite side of the brook were parted, and a girl-child appeared. For a long moment we eyed each other across the brook, then all at once her pretty lips curved to a smile. "Little maid," says I furtively, thrusting the knife into my belt, "art not afraid of me, then?"
"Nay," she answered, smiling yet and shaking her golden head.
"And why?"
"I do like your eyes, big man. Kind eyes they be."
"Are they?" says I, glancing from her smiling innocence into the brook.
"Aye, and your voice. I do like that too. 'Tis soft and low, like father's."
"And who's your father?"
"He be the blacksmith."
"How old are you?"
7, and a big maid I be. Will he aid me cross brook now?"
So I lifted her over, and there we sat, side by side, she laughing and talking, and I hearkening to her childish prattle with marvelous great pleasure. Presently I ventured to touch her soft cheek, to stroke her curls, and finding she took this not to amiss, summoned the courage to stoop and kiss her. How long we had sat thus, I know not, when I was roused by a shrill, harsh voice, and turning, beheld a bony woman who peered at us through the leaves.
"Susan Ann," she cried. "Oh, you, Susan, come away. Come quick, or I'll run for your mother."
"The child is safe enough," says I, frowning, but clasping the small damsel closer within my arm.
"Safe," cries the woman, turning on me in fury. "Safe? Ah, forsooth, we're great. It'll rogue the like of you. Loose her. Loose her, or I'll scream and rouse the village on ye for a wild gypsy wastrel that ye are."
And here the old harridan railed at me until the child whimpered for fear. Even I blenched before the woman's fierce aspect and shrewish tongue. Then while she loaded me with abuse, a ceaseless torrent, and no lack of breath, I kissed the little maid's tear-wetted cheek, and setting her back across the brook, stood to watch until the child and woman were lost to my sight. Then I sat down, scowling at the hurrying water, chin on fist. For my black humor, banished a while by the child's innocent faith in me, was returned, and therewith an added bitterness. Scowling yet, I plucked forth my knife, and seizing my staff, set to trim and shape it to a formidable weapon. And as I worked, I cursed this woman deep and oft, yet even so knew she had the right on't. For truly I was a rogue, an outcast of unlovely look and unlovely ways, a desperate fellow unfit for the company of decent folk, much less an innocent child, and yet, remembering those fearless child eyes, the kiss of those pure child lips, I sighed amain betwixt my muttered cursings. At last, having trimmed my bludgeon to a nicety, I laid it by and sat brooding, the knife betwixt my knees. Now a beam of sun falling athwart the leaves lit upon the broad blade of the knife and made it a glory, and beholding this and the hand that grasped it, I took pleasure to heed how strong and sinewy were my fingers, and how the muscles bulged beneath the brown skin of my forearm, and turning the glittering steel this way and that, I fell to joyous thought of my enemy and of my vengeance now so near. Tonight, says I to myself, death ever come with more terrors in the dark, tonight. But now, little by little, my joy gave place to anger, that the night must be so long a coming. Glancing up, I cursed the sun that it must needs shine, and the gladsome day that it was not grim night. And presently to anger was added a growing fear, lest mine enemy might by some hap elude me at the 11th hour, might even now be slipping from my reach. Now at this, a sweat break out on me, and leaping to my feet, I was minded to seek him out and end the matter there and then. Why wait for tonight? I asked myself. Surely in the gladsome light of day, death findeth an added bitterness. Why wait for night then? So I stood a while, debating within myself, then, catching up my knotted bludgeon, I set off along the stream and continent, following a path I had trodden many a time when but a lad, a path that led on through mazy thickets, shady dells and green coppices, dappled with sunlight and glad with the trilling melody of birds. But ever as I went, before my eyes was a man who twisted in my grasp and died over and over again, and in my ears the sounds of his agony. And ever as I went, trees reached out arms as if to stay me, and bushes stretched forth a little thorny fingers that caught my garments as if to hinder me from my purpose. But I brushed them aside with my scarred arms, or beat them down with my heavy staff, or leaping hedge and ditch and fallen tree, until I reached the highway. And even as I came there, a distant clock chimed the hour of 10. I quickened my pace, twirling my staff as I went, so that the two or three wayfarers I chanced to meet drew from my neighborhood and eyed me mightily askance. Having thus gone some mile or so, I came to a wall that bordered the road, a high and mossy wall, and following this, to a pair of gates set well back from the highway, with pillars of stone each surmounted by a couchant leopard carved in the stone. Now these gates were of iron, very lofty and strong and fast shut, but besides these was a smaller gate or postern of wood, hard by the gatehouse, where stood a lusty fellow in fair livery, picking his teeth with a straw and staring at the square toes of his shoes. Hearing me approach, he glanced up and, frowning, shook his head and waved me away. "Here's no road for the likes of you," said he while I was yet at some distance. "Off wi' you!" Howbeit, seeing I still advanced, he clapped to the gate, and letting fall the bar, cursed me roundly through the grill. "I would see Sir Richard Brandon," says I. "Then ye can't. No why, so be off and be danged." "Open the gate," says I. "I'll be hanged for a murderous-looking rogue, a lousy thief, a wastrel, and a hangdog knave," says he all in a breath. "All true enough," says I, "and now open the gate." "Be danged for a prigging gypsy, a gad, I'll have you clapped in the pillory for a black-visited clapper-claw." "Unbar," says I, "or it shall go plaguey ill with you when I come in." At this he spat upon me through the grill and chuckled. Now glancing about, I espied a stone hard by about the bigness of a man's head, and laying by my staff, I wrenched the stone from where it lay, and raising it aloft, hove it with all my strength, whereon the gate crashed open so suddenly as to catch the fellow a buffet that laid him sprawling on his back, and as he strove to rise, I pinned him down with my staff and kicked him heartily. "And now," says I, "up with you and bring me to your master." But or ever he could do aught but groan and rub his hurts, I heard the sound of approaching hoofstrokes, and turning, beheld a lady bravely mounted, who galloped furiously towards us down the avenue, when almost upon us she swung her powerful beast aside, and checking him with a strong wrist, sat looking down at me from the shade of her plumed hat. "What is this?" she demanded, and her eyes swept over me, gray and wide and fearless. "Who are you?" Now at the sound of her voice, so rich and wondersweet, I felt strangely abashed, and finding no word, turned from her to scowl down at the man I had pinned beneath my broken shoe. "Who are you?" she questioned again. "Speak!"
A rogue, says I, keeping my head averted, a creeper of hedges.
Ah, is't you? Said she in softer tone. I saw you for a moment by lightning flash near the gibbet. You are my man of the woods, and, sir, I owe you much. Very much indeed, sir, if...
I am no sir, quoth I shortly.
Gregory, says she, looking down on the fellow neath my foot. Gregory, get up.
Gregory, says I, stir not.
Sir, would you hurt my servant? Says she, knitting her slender black brows.
Aye, faith, I nodded. The uncivil rogue forced me to burst open the gate.
And why are you here? Who are you? What is your name? Cried she a little breathlessly, and I wondered at the fixed intensity of her gaze.
Gregory, says I, taking my foot from his middle, but threatening him with my staff. I am come for no traffic with maids, so rise up and bring me to your master. Nay, groans the fellow, turning up his eyes, 'tis thing impossible. Here's only my lady.
Aye,
seek your master. Is he within?
Nay, says Gregory, flinching beneath my staff, as my lady shall tell ye.
He's not here.
Ha, quoth I, that I will see for myself. But as I turned to stride up the avenue, my lady wheeled her horse, barring my way. Whither go you? She demanded, her eyes holding mine.
To the house for Sir Richard. I have been at some small pains to gain speech with him.
To what end?
Why, truly, I answered, leaning upon my staff and viewing her eye to eye, 'tis a matter of vital moment, aye. In a matter of speaking, 'tis a matter of life and death betwixt us.
Now, as I stood thus, I could not but be conscious of her glowing, vigorous beauty, her body's noble shape, the easy grace of her as she sat her fretting horse, swaying to his every movement. And to me, in my rags, she seemed no woman but a goddess, rather, proud, immaculate, and very far removed, and yet these proud lips could, mayhap, grow soft and tender, these clear eyes that met mine so fearlessly. The staff was wrenched from my loosened grasp, and Gregory, leaping to his feet, fetched me therewith a staggering blow on blow, shouting with his every stroke, "Oh, Peter, Roger, Will, ho, hither, lads, all, loose the dogs, hither to me, a God's name!" But though mused with blows, I rushed in blindly, and closing with the fellow, got him fairly by the throat, and shook him to and fro. And now was I minded to choke him outright. But even then spied a cavalier who spurred his horse against me. Hereupon I dashed the breathless Gregory aside, and turned to meet my new assailant, a spruce young gallant, from curling lovelock to Spanish boots. I remember cursing savagely as his whip caught me. Then, or ever he could reach me again, I sprang in beneath the head of his rearing horse, and seizing the rein close by the bridle, began to drag and wrench at the bit. I heard shouts and a woman's cry of fear, but I strove only the fiercer while up and up reared the great roan horse, snorting in terror, his forelegs lashing wildly. Above tossing mane, the eyes of his rider glared down at me, as laughing exultant, I wrenched savagely at the bridle until, whinnying with pain and terror, the great beast, losing his balance, crashed over backwards into the dust. Leaping clear of those desperate, wild, thrashing hooves, I found myself beset by divers fellows armed with staves, who closed upon me, shouting. And above these, her eyes wide, her full red lips close set, my lady looked down on me, and I, meeting that look, laughed even as her fellows rushed at me. "Go, cosset, your pretty springald wench!" But even then, dazed and half-blinded by a hail of blows, I staggered, sank to my knees, struggled up again, smiting with bare fists. A flame seemed to flash before my eyes, a taste of blood was on my tongue, and all sounds grew faint and far away as, stumbling blindly, I threw up my arms, tripped and plunged down and down into an engulfing darkness, and knew no more.
Please join me next week. Will vengeance be served on thrilling tales of adventure?